Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά.
SBS Radio, Greek Language Program, Θέμη Κάλλος with you, dear listeners. Let us now take you to Greece through the lenses, or rather the writings, of Australian author Sally Jane Smith. Sally published last year her work titled Unpacking for Greece, and this year she presents the follow-up, which is Repacking for Greece, a Mediterranean Odyssey. The author, who resides at the central coast of New South Wales, is with us today in the studio to tell us more about her books on Hellas. Dear Sally, thank you very much for accepting our invitation, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Thémy. I'm really excited to be chatting with you today.
Now, we cannot talk about the repacking without touching upon the unpacking. I think the full title of the first book is Unpacking for Greece, Travel in a Land of Fortresses, Fables, Fairies, and Feta. So please tell us, how did all this begin? What inspired you?
Well, Thémy, I went to Greece for the first time in 2016. And, you know, even saying that, I can't believe it took me that long to get to Greece. It hadn't been very much on my travel radar. But when one day I was going through a bit of a life crisis, I had felt for various reasons that I was losing my passion for life. And I was looking for somewhere to go to find myself again. And I know that's a bit of a cliche that people go to Greece in their midlife to find themselves. But I always say, you know, people have been traveling to Greece to find themselves for thousands of years, you know, from the days of going to see the oracle at Delphi. And how I decided on Greece as a destination is I was scrolling through the World Heritage List. It was a supremely bad day I was having at work, and I was sitting at my desk in lunch hour, dreaming of where I could go. And as soon as I saw the sites, the Greek World Heritage sites on that list, I knew that was where I need to be. And a few weeks later, I was there.
It sounds simple, but I don't think it was that simple. In the promotional material, Sally, we read the following. Sally finds it is possible for a clumsy, out-of-shape woman on a budget to experience a life-changing journey. I'm not going to ask you about the clumsy, the out-of-shape, nor the budget, which I think most of us can relate, but I will focus my journalistic curiosity to the life-changing journey. Please elaborate.
Greece changed my life in a number of ways, and that wasn't something I was expecting when I booked those tickets. The first way in which Greece changed my life, and, you know, I kind of joked about going to find myself, but really it was a very difficult time in my life. 10 years before that journey, I had been traveling solo in Sri Lanka. And I was in a traumatic bus accident where I was very badly injured. Now, up until that point, travel had been a very important part of my life. And what I didn't realize happened was, you know, I recovered, maybe 90% recovered physically from that experience. But I had lost my willingness to take on the world. I had just stopped traveling. And when I say I stopped traveling, I was still going, you know, on a cruise or to visit my family overseas. But I had stopped going out to find a country where I was unfamiliar with the language, where I was unfamiliar with the currency, with the public transportation systems, and going there and really exploring it myself, by myself, on my own. This trip to Greece was a conscious decision to reclaim that part of myself. I made specifically the decision to travel Greece by bus. And it wasn't easy for me. I had a big fear of traveling in buses. But it was the most amazing experience because when you travel by public transport, I think you experience a country in a different way. You're interacting with the people around you in ways that you don't if you are traveling maybe with your family or as a part of a couple in a car. And that experience, that is one of probably the three ways in which Greece changed my life, is I got over that fear. There were a couple of scary bus trips, I'm not going to lie. There were some trips sort of on the edge of a precipice plunging down into the ocean or, you know, there was one trip I'll never forget where the bus driver, you know, was sort of driving with his elbows while he was examining his travel manifest. So there were some times I was outside my comfort zone, but that trip helped me to regain that passion for travel.
Again, it is written that Sally tells her story with warmth, humor, and a fascination with Greece's natural and cultural heritage. And she connects with her past, overcomes her fears, and falls in love with life again. One olive at a time. I like that phrase, one olive at a time. Now, a lot of these sound very personal and are personal, and it is best for the reader to discover themselves. But I would like to ask you, what are some of the most surprising cultural insights or discoveries you made while traveling through Greece? What fascinated you, in other words?
There's something about the Greek people I met. The Greek people, I think, embody a number of values. There is an incredible resilience in Greece. You know, Greece is a country that has been invaded and abused
again and again.
Again and again and again over the centuries. But you know, the Greeks are still there. And they're not just still there physically, they're still there in a way that, an indefinable way, where I feel that the people and the landscape are interconnected so strongly. And then combined with this resilience and the strength of character, you know, which are quite sort of powerful qualities, there's also this amazing culture of, and I will apologize because this is a word I practice again and again, and I think I usually get it wrong, but the philoxenia.
Philoxenia, hospitality.
The philoxenia of the Greeks was something that took me by surprise. And I will say that that was not only when I was in Greece itself. It wasn't only when, you know, I was sitting in the taverna and the you know, the extra dessert came out and the mama came out of the kitchen to chat with me. It was not only that. It was also what happened when I started writing about my experiences. And in fact, when I first published these books, the first book, it never occurred to me, and I know that sounds a strange thing to say now, but it never occurred to me how much the books would be welcomed by Greeks of the diaspora. Mm-hmm. I wrote it for tourists. I wrote it for myself in terms of working out these various personal journeys I'd gone on. But I wrote it as a travel companion. I wrote it so I'm fascinated by heritage. I'm fascinated by stories. And, you know, Greece is a land of stories like no other. And I wrote this book so that someone like me traveling to Greece, who maybe doesn't have the patience to read all the museum panels and do a lot of research, could go to the country and get just that little bit below the surface. But it never occurred to me that Greek people would welcome me. And that has been the most surprising thing of all, is not only during that journey, but I mean, even this interview now, you know, this interview now where I am being welcomed as a non-Greek, a non-Hellenic person who is writing about your country.
Now, this maybe a bit more personal. Why has Greece become so close to your heart?
I said that Greece changed my life in more than one way. There is another reason. I had a difficult relationship with my mother. Nothing horrendous, you know. I'm not going to tell you any terrible stories.
Nothing unusual between a child and a parent.
Exactly. And my mother died when I was in my 20s. At that stage, I had lived in a different city for a while and had never really connected with her as an adult woman. She was always just this person who was my mother, who I never saw her personality and her as somebody I could truly connect with outside of the parent-child relationship. When I was going to Greece, you know, I didn't even know this, but my mother had been to Greece. She'd been in 1978. Now, my mother had traveled very little in her life, but she was a very religious woman. And she had gone from South Africa, where I grew up. She had gone with her church on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, you know, Jerusalem and other areas there. She'd gone, they were Catholics, so she went to the Vatican to see the Pope. And on the way back, they stopped at Greece, you know, and I guess to see the places where St. Paul preached. Mm-hmm. And to visit some important sites there. And they were only there for a couple of days. It wasn't for very long. But she kept a little diary. And, you know, Themi, I brought it with me, but it's in my bag. She kept this little diary. And my sisters, my older sisters, I'm the youngest of six children. I didn't remember her trip. I remember she went away, but I was seven. You know, I didn't remember anything about it. Just before I left, my sister said, I've got this diary for you. And I took that diary in my pocket. I saved it. I didn't open it until I was in Athens. And I was sitting in the rooftop bar of a little hotel, a little family-run hotel, looking up at the Parthenon. And I opened this diary for the first time and read my mother's words. Now, I'd like to say that this was an incredibly enlightening experience, but in fact, the diary was a very frustrating diary. Her notes were very cryptic. She was a very different kind of traveler from the traveler I am. But I went through this process of reading her words again and again and again as I was traveling. And it was when I was in Meteora that I had a moment of insight. And I realized that my mother had gone to Greece at the same age that I had gone to Greece, and that she was a woman who was encountering a new side of herself in a foreign to her country in the same way that I was. And that was the first time that I felt I connected with her as a woman. We're still never going to have, you know, when I look back at our relationship, their problems, but I've made peace with them now, and that happened in Greece. That letting go of old resentments, that all happened in that moment in Meteora.
Now, that in itself is very fascinating, and thank you for sharing it with us. You mentioned Meteora, you mentioned Athens. Which parts of Greece do you cover in your first book?
In my first book, and your listeners who know anything about the geography of Greece will realize I had no idea what I was doing. In the first book, I crisscrossed the country. I did not do it in a very practical way at all. I started in Athens and then took the bus down on the Peloponnese to Monomvasia.
Monomvasia, yes.
And after that, I went, you know, through Sparta. I spent a couple of hours in Sparta. And I went to what was a colossal failure of a Google search. I was looking for a yoga retreat. I ended up at a writing retreat. So I went to a little place called Limnitsa, which is on the Methana Peninsula, some way out of Methana town itself. So I spent a week at the writing retreat with all the writers. I was not writing. I was trying to learn a few great phrases of Greek while I was there. From there, I went up to Meteora and then flew to Santorini and then to Rhodos. And that was my first trip. So as you can see, I went kind of from one side of Greece to the other in a very impractical way.
Out of curiosity, you traveled to Santorini through boat?
Santorini, I went up to Thessaloniki.
Okay.
And flew from there.
And the same with Rhodos?
Yes, flew from Santorini to Rhodos.
You mentioned something about traveling with bus. I don't want to take the time personally, but I do love traveling with bus around Greece. And I do that because it helps me to value and love more the landscape.
Absolutely. You see it. You're quite high up.
If you drive yourself, your attention is on the road, etc., etc. You don't have time to think and look around you.
Mm.
And as you said, you are a bit higher on the coaches.
Yes.
And doesn't matter how many times I go to Greece, I love traveling with bus. I share that passion with you. And I would love one day if I can do it in Australia. I haven't done it yet. Even though the landscape here is totally different to the one in Greece. Now, let's dwell on the follow-up book, Repacking for Greece, A Mediterranean Odyssey. Odyssey can have positive and non-positive connotations, I think. You will tell me how you describe Odyssey here. What prompted you to write this follow-up, and how did it come about?
I actually wrote the two books together. This book described a second trip that I took to Greece, and it was only 8 months after the first trip.
So soon.
So soon. After a year of not traveling to Greece, I followed up as soon as I could. And in fact, I wasn't expecting to go to Greece on that trip. I was planning a trip to Canada. I think I mentioned earlier that I am South African by birth, and I grew up as a white South African during the apartheid years. And in that time, I was involved in some activism, protesting against apartheid, especially in the period immediately after Nelson Mandela was released from prison. You know, that was a great, it was a great moment, but it was also a great public relations exercise from the apartheid government. And there were still a lot of terrible things happening after his release, including a lot of other political prisoners who were not released. And in that period, when we were campaigning for those prisoners to be released, especially at a time many had gone on hunger strike from Robben Island, the prison that Nelson Mandela spent most of his years in, there were a few occasions when I was arrested during demonstrations. And I had been planning a trip to Canada, but because of this arrest record and the difficulty of getting the documentation I needed to satisfy the Canadian authorities, I could not get my visa in time. So I was sitting, I'd arranged this time off work. You know, I'd saved my money for the trip, and now I couldn't go. And I thought, where do I need to go? And I knew that that journey that I had taken with my mum's diary was not complete. I had made these massive strides in my mind in making peace with my mum, but I hadn't got all the way there. So, you know, this is what I've tried to kind of half as a joke, half humorously to capture in my book titles. Unpacking for Greece was about shedding that emotional baggage. That repacking was more about replenishment. It was about, what do I fill that space with now? And I went back to Greece with my mum's diary. And this time, because I knew I had her diary, I could plan my trip to go to the places that she had visited. This trip was a slower trip. It was a trip where I do have issues with anxiety in general in my life. It was a trip where I let go of a lot of anxiety and learned that instead of always chasing after the next experience, you know, always trying to get to that next place, I needed to slow down a little bit, and I needed to capture the joy in the present moment, which I think is something also I've learned from Greeks, and to experience that kefi, you know, in Greece, instead of always rushing to the next milestone. And that became the second book.
Wow, wow. Dear listeners, you are tuned into SBS Radio, the Greek language program, and today we are having here in the studio the author, Sally Jane Smith. You mentioned the word replenishment, and I have a question for that. I'm sure there are a lot of personal aspects to this book too, like the first one. You just mentioned that the term replenishment, and I want to ask you to tell us, what do you mean by that?
I had felt very empty at a certain point in my life, and you know, it's hard to admit that that you are a cliche in some ways, but, you know, I was in my 40s. I had had quite an adventurous youth. I'd lived on 5 continents. I'd traveled a great deal. I'd had a lot of very different and very exciting jobs. And I had settled into, you know, as many of us do in our middle age, a life that was comfortable and good, but mundane. And I felt very empty. That replenishment, I think, was about, you know, it was about filling my soul. It was about accepting, first of all, recognizing how privileged I am. You know, to be able to travel like this is incredible. You look at the world's population and what tiny percentage could do this.
Correct.
So it was about recognizing what I already had, but also to opening myself to that kind of fulfillment that I was experiencing in Greece.
Very personal. Now, this second book, what destinations does it cover?
So the second book, let me think. I again started in Athens, as one does. Mm-hmm. I traveled up to Delphi next.
Yes, the center of the world.
The center of the world, absolutely. I saw the Omphalos.
Omphalos της γης, yes. The Omphalos of the earth.
Yes. From Delphi, I went to Corfu, Kekira, for a few days, and then on to Kefalonia, where I stayed with my friend. I have a Greek-Australian friend who is in my book club. I'll give a quick shout-out to Kate. I stayed with Kate's parents in Kefalonia. From Kefalonia, where did I go? I went back to the Peloponnese Peninsula. I stayed in Nafplio, and while I was in Nafplio, I visited Epidavros and Mycenae. Two incredible sites. I think I mentioned before that story is very important to me. And, you know, to go to the places where, you know, Clytemnestra and Agamemnon.
Agamemnon.
It was, I think you could tell from my face, I'm getting a thrill just talking about it. To go to those sites was something very, very special.
You went also to Mykene or Mycenae? I'm not sure how you pronounce
yes,
it in English.
Yes, it's Mykene. And okay. I was thinking when I was talking to you, how do I pronounce this in Greek? Because I had the same experience when I was in Greece looking for the bus that nobody knew where I was talking about. Mykene, yes.
Yeah, Mykenes, yes.
And from there, I went to the Saronic Islands because that's where my mother visited. So to Poros and Idra on that visit. It was on a later visit that I went to Aegina, which was another incredible experience, but that wasn't in that trip. So, and of course, I went back to the writer's retreat because this time I was a writer. And I could...
They welcomed you as one of their own.
Yes. So I've been back there every time I've been to Greece.
Okay.
I'm just talking to them about booking my fourth stay at this writer's retreat that is not a yoga retreat in hopefully in April, May next year.
So I lost count. How many times have you been now to Greece?
This upcoming trip will only be the fourth time.
The fourth. So you've already been 3 times.
I've been 3 times, yes. I've not yet written the book for the third time. I have an idea in my mind, but I haven't got those words down on paper yet.
Now, I have many, many questions, Sally Jane. Can you share with us a particularly memorable encounter or a story from your travels in Greece that stands out to you?
Yes, yes. I will tell you about something that happened in my most recent trip, which was in 2023. And this was a moment that was so important to me that even though it was not part of the trip that is covered in the second book, I included it as a bonus chapter because I needed to write about it. Aegina was one of the places my mother visited, and all I had was a few lines in her diary about it. And I hadn't got there yet. I'd gone past it in the ferry a few times. Every time I went from Methana to Athens at each trip, the boat would stop in Aegina, and I'd see there's this one column remaining from the temple to Apollo that stands up, you know, it stabs up like this pillar pointing up to the sky. And I thought, well, this is my opportunity. I'm on the way back to Limnitsa, and I'd stay there for a couple of nights. And I have to say that I underestimated how incredible an island Aegina is. I went to a few sites when I was there, but the one that I will tell you about is the Paleochora.
Paleochora, yeah.
I didn't even know about the Paleochora. I didn't know it existed. I was planning a trip to the Temple of Apheil, and my landlady, she saw I was wearing hiking boots, and she said, oh, do you like walking? I said, yeah, I like walking. She said, let me tell you where to go. She said, get out at the monastery of St. Nectarios. Go behind the monastery and walk up the hill, and you'll get to Paleochora. And she told me a story, but I didn't understand very well what she was saying. You know, I was very tired from traveling. My Greek is almost non-existent. She had a strong accent. I didn't understand her story, but I understood there was something about pirates, and there was something about 365 churches, one for every day of the year, she told me. I didn't know any more than that. You know, I went on that walk, and I found this incredible place. The story of this place is that during the Middle Ages, when, you know, the Ottoman pirates were raiding the coasts for slaves, the people that were staying in, you know, on the coastline, which is where people normally stay, retreated to the mountaintops. And up high in the hills, they created a new capital city. And in the city, they built many, many churches. Now, archaeologists are debating, were they really 365? We don't know. But there were many, many scores and scores of churches in this place. And they stayed there for, you know, almost 1,000 years that city was inhabited. But the coasts became safe again, and people moved back to where the trade routes were and the fishing grounds were. And Paleochora became deserted. And the buildings, over the hundreds of years, the buildings crumbled to dust, except for the churches, because the people were still going up on the saints' days. So one day a year, people would go to the churches to honor the saints, not of every single church, but of quite a few of the churches, and they would clean them and maintain them for that year. And now you go there, and that's all that's left. There's nothing else left. They're just churches. There are about 30, I think they are, well, they're between 30 and 40 churches that are still there. And you can't see them as you're walking up because they're not whitewashed, you know, as we're used to seeing churches in Greece. It's just the naked stone, and it's against the stony hill. And you get closer and closer, and suddenly something shifts in your brain, and the pattern on the hillside resolves, and they're just churches everywhere, Themos. You just look around, and there are all these churches. Some are very dilapidated, some are very well kept, but everywhere there are these churches. And I walked around the site for 2 hours, 3 hours. I didn't see another human being there. It was just me in this incredibly spiritual place. There were times where I had to, you know, there'd been a bit of a landslide over the path and I had to clamber around it. Once or twice I thought, should I turn back? But I kept on up to the summit of the hill where the old cisterns are. And it was a moment that will stay with me forever, that moment on that hillside.
Well, listening to you, I have not been to Aegina, but listening to you now, I have to include Aegina and Paleochora in my next travel. Sally Jane, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced while traveling in Greece and writing about your experiences, and how did you overcome these challenges?
Traveling in Greece, well, the biggest challenge was getting in the buses. That was a challenge for me. But apart from that, I actually found Greece a remarkably easy country to travel in. Part of that was because if ever I was confused, people helped me. You know, there is this hospitality.
Philoxenia,
that you were talking about.
You said philoxenia, that says it all.
I mean, people gave me lifts. There was a place I went to visit in Crete last year. I want to say it's called Apteras. I'm not sure. It is near Chania.
Near Chania.
Mm-hmm. But it is a place that's very difficult to get to without a car. And I caught a bus, but I had to just tell the bus to let me out just at an intersection in the road. And then I had to climb up a hill, which I did not realize how steep it was. And a man pulled up in a car, and it was an elderly man in a car that, you know, that car must have been 30 years old because it was wheezing as it was going up the hill. And offered me a lift, you know, and that sounds like a small thing, but it was a situation, I mean, he didn't know who I was. He didn't speak English. As I say, my Greek is down to a few phrases. My most used phrase in Greek is "signomi, then katalaveno."
That's very good.
Well, it's good because I say it a lot.
If you can manage that.
I have a lot of conversations that start out with one good phrase. You know, I might just say, I might just ask to buy a ticket. And because I can say that one phrase well, the person I'm speaking to thinks that I can speak Greek. And
they follow up.
And they follow up. And then I have to say, "signomi, then katalaveno." And then they laugh and they say, "Oh, I was just telling you what good Greek you speak." And then we laugh because clearly I don't. But, you know, it's all these moments. People helped me. So I didn't find Greece a challenging place to travel at all.
Well, when is your next trip to Greece?
I'm hoping April next year. I listened to a podcast called Ouzo Talk.
Yes.
I'll give a shout out to Ouzo Talk as well. It's a great podcast. And recently, a few months ago, they actually they interviewed the Australian ambassador to Greece.
The current one?
Yes. And she was talking about the memorial trail, the Anzac Memorial Trail that is being
in
Lemnos. And I've never been to Lemnos. Mm. And I've also not really been to the northern parts of Greece, you know, the Macedonian region of Greece. I would very much like to travel there. So I'm hoping that in April, May next year, around Anzac Day, I will be able to go over, go to Lemnos, go to Lesbos, which I've never visited, and then the northern parts of the mainland.
In a few weeks' time, there's going to be a presentation of the book in Central Coast. Can you please give us the details?
I can, and I will also tell you some other very exciting information as well. I will be speaking as one of three authors on the 5th of June, Wednesday, June the 5th, in the evening at Tuggera Library, which is on the Central Coast. The three of us will be launching our books, and it's an incredible honor because it is being hosted by the Words on the Waves Writers Festival, which is our festival on the Central Coast. So I'm very grateful for that. So I will just say tickets are free, and if you go to the Words on the Waves website, which is just wordsonthewaves.com.au, you can grab your free tickets, and I'd love to see people there. And please come up and say hi afterwards. But I've also got some very exciting news to share that I just got the go-ahead to share this morning, Themi. Festival Hellenica in Adelaide.
Adelaide, yes.
I will be doing an event in Adelaide on July the 11th. And so if there are any Greek people or non-Greek people, Philippines in Adelaide.
We have listeners in Adelaide.
I would be very excited to see them. I got the go-ahead this morning that I can share that news. But at the moment, it's very much just a, you know, save the date, July the 11th. We haven't decided on the venue yet. But if people keep an eye on the Festival Hellenica website or on my website, they'll be able to see about that. And the reason I say that's even more exciting is because this is the first live event that I am doing with a Hellenic organization, which is an incredible privilege for me. I'm very excited about that.
I am informed that both of your books, there's a lot of interest even within Greece. Is that correct?
I have had some interest in Greece, and I would love to be able to get the book out more in Greece. The biggest moment for me was a month after I published the first book. There is a Greek government website called Greek News Agenda, and they selected Unpacking for Greece as their Reading Greece Book of the Month. You know, that blew me away. someone brought my book to their attention, and they gave me that incredible honor. I have had some other media coverage in Greece, but it's difficult because my book is only in English, and also because I am independently published. I've published the books myself. You know, when I was looking for a publisher for them, it was during COVID, during the lockdowns, that I was sending my manuscript off to publishers. And at that time, I was just told that, you know, commercially, no Australian publisher could just take a chance on a travel book at that time. And that's when I decided to do it myself. And I'm very glad I've done it myself. And I chose to go that way with the second book as well. But there are some challenges. And one of the challenges is distribution and trying to get the book into bookshops in Greece has been something that I have struggled with. So unfortunately, most Greeks don't know about my book, but hopefully one day that will change.
Talking about that, our listeners, how can they find your books? Where can they find them?
They can order the book anywhere books are sold. So most bookshops, you know, most big bookshops won't have it sitting on the shelf if they go you know, just browse and look for it. But all of them can order it in. So they can order it in, you know, any bookshop from Dimmock's to their independent neighborhood bookshop, all of them will be able to order it. They can find it online at places like Amazon or any of the other online retailers. It's pretty much everywhere. And, you know, I'd just also like to say, don't forget libraries. I would love to see my book in more libraries. I know it's in about 50 libraries around Australia at the moment, but most libraries, if you go and ask them, they'll purchase a book for their collection if they don't already have it. So, you know, I'm just happy to get the book into the hands of readers. It's not always about sales.
Now, Sally, before I let you go, I get the impression that there will be a third book. I'm not going to say fourth, but I think it's going to be a third book about your travelings to Greece. Is that something that you're already thinking about?
More than thinking about, but
You have the draft.
I don't have a draft. Less than a draft. More than thinking about, but less than a draft. Look, I can't commit to it just yet because, you know, I have to see if the story has legs. You know, you can't just a book that people will want to read has to have a story to it. It can't just be, I saw this place, I saw that place, I saw the other place. It gets boring after a while, you know. I'm hoping my next book will be called Packing for Crete.
Solely for Crete.
Yes. I would like to concentrate on Crete in the next book. There is so much to write about in Crete, and especially I would like to talk about the stories. There is so much literature. Greek literature, also foreign written literature about Crete. I managed to see some amazing literary sites when I was there. You know, I visited the grave of Nikos Kazantzakis. On the one hand, I saw the Spinalonga Island, which is, you know, Tanisi, the island, the Greek TV series and book.
Oh, yes, I know. Yeah, based on the British author's book.
Victoria Hislop, book.
Yes.
I got to see that island and walk there, which was incredible. I saw Australian author Kate Forsyth. She wrote a World War II story called The Crimson Thread. And, you know, when I was in Crete, you know, I kicked myself because I messed up my travel arrangements. I made a complete rookie mistake. I worked out on a map, and I should know better by now. I worked out on a map where I could get to from one day to the next, where I could travel to. I didn't take into account the White Mountains. Mm-hmm. And you know that you can't just look on a map and say I can get from point A to point B in one day by bus, because actually if I wanted to go to Chorias Fakion I've just gone blank on the east coast.
Agios Nikolaos?
Yes, Agios Nikolaos. I thought I could get from Agios Nikolaos to Chorias Fakion in one day by public transport. This is not possible. So, because in fact, you have to take a bus all the way to Chania and then take another bus. And it was, you know, Easter weekend. And I'm embarrassed to admit that I did not thoroughly research that. But when I was driving, you know, on these or riding in these buses, I thought, you know, this book I've just read, The Crimson Thread, it talks all about how, you know, the resistance movement and the soldiers had to climb the mountains and they couldn't get through and these terribly difficult passes they had to go on. Why did it not occur to me that I would not be able to take a short cross, you know, across the backbone of the island? So, yes, stories. I hope my next book will be about the stories of Crete.
Sally, I have the impression that this is one of many interviews to follow, hopefully in the studio. if not in the studio, over the phone. For today, I'd just like to say that it has been a mere pleasure having you here with me in the studio. We wish you all the best. And as I said, hopefully we will find the opportunity to chat again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ευχαριστώ.
Παρακαλώ.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν? Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.